Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One,
Spotify,
and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Uncle Chill, Uncle Chill, there's no bad guy like Uncle Chill. Never lost, not even a round, undefeated, undisputed. Oh yeah, here comes the bad guy. Uncle Chill, Uncle Chill, there's no bad guy like Uncle Chill. Never lost, not even a round, undefeated, undisputed. Oh yeah, here comes the bad guy. Uncle Chill, Uncle Chill, there's no bad guy like Uncle Chill. Never lost, not even a round, undefeated, undisputed. Oh yeah, here comes the bad guy, Uncle Chill.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Brian Ortega, Korean Zombie, where do you begin? I mean, right, when you tell a story after the story has happened, what is there to talk about? In most part. Well, not so fast. This is one of the great parts about talking about a fight when it's done. Okay, you have the story before the fight happens. You have the story of the fight. But something always happens after, but it never gets told. It's lit on fire. Doesn't matter how intriguing it is, it's lit on fire because the sport only moves in one direction, which is forward. And then you miss some of the good parts of the story. Okay, you have to understand going to this fight. Ortega has been out 2 years? How long has Ortega been out? 2 years? Almost 2 years since that Max Holloway fight? A lot of things happen in that Max fight. One thing that happens within this sport that I do not believe is true for any other sport, which is the more you do it, you do not get better at it, you get worse. Okay, now there's a tipping point. There's a tipping point where, yes, you are still experience and skill building. I understand that. But generally, to use basketball, more basketball games you play, the better you get at basketball. Just by example. And then put any sport in there you want except fighting. You leave a part of yourself in the ring each time. You don't take more with you. So if you back up to Ortega's fight with Max, it was a massacre. I mean, anything that could go wrong went wrong. And there's only a couple of things in fighting that are going to be very scary. One of them is if you cannot protect yourself on the feet with an opponent and you do not have the ability to take that opponent off his feet, and that's what happened to Ortega. Ortega talked about it. He said, I've never been so tired. I couldn't raise my hands up. I couldn't prep my head up to protect my head. I couldn't lower my hands to protect my body. I was just a target. He was very open about it. But if you do take into account the exhaustion, and then you juxtapose that with the layoff, things do not get better by not doing them. That means he's going to get more tired in this contest. And a combat athlete's biggest fear is not losing. His biggest fear is exhaustion. That I will reach a point of fatigue when I can't finish the match, or I can't follow the number one unified rule, which is to protect myself at all times. That's what happened to him against Max. So now you're left with a question of how could he possibly be better after a tormenting experience like that and a layoff. Then Ortega was very open. I love the open guys. Anytime a guy's open with you, even if he's saying things that you would perceive to be counterintuitive, such as he's questioning himself, such as I changed my team, such as I wasn't doing things right before, but now I am. When you start to hear these things, it's going to make you question the athlete, but a little bit more trained ear will show you that when a guy is being open, it's like any problem. Take alcoholism. It's just an example that you would know. The first step to recovery is admitting that you have a problem. So when Ortega was coming out before this fight and he was saying, man, I got my heads up in the clouds. All of a sudden, I'm this famous fighter. Ortega was doing movies, by the way. By the way, I saw it. He was actually quite great in his role. Should mention that to you. And he said, I kind of left the people. I kind of left the people that were around me. I found this new group. I just, my head got big. He said, I realized what I had done wrong. I went back to all my entrusted inner circle. They welcomed me in, said, happy to have you back. And boom, that was that. But then you're left to question, is he telling the truth? If everything he is saying is happening the way he's saying it's happening, he's going to be in a good spot, at least in theory, as long as he's telling the truth. So he comes out against Zombie, and Zombie is so good. Oh my God, Zombie's just tough, right? Zombie is the persona of tough. He's not going away, period. 5 rounds, 5 minutes, 35 minutes, 1 hour and 5 minutes. Zombie's going to be there for the duration. And he was. This was not a case of the Zombie had a bad night. That's not what happened. Zombie got knocked down. He worked his way, scrambled back up to his feet, and started trading. He was just a step behind. And we could talk about it till we're blue in the face, but a fight is nothing more than a dance in that one person can lead at a time. That's it. And a lot of times the fighters will have this unspoken deal. All right, it's your turn. You get your combo off. Okay, now you stand there. Let me get my combo. Okay, you get yours off. You don't want that to be the case, but that's usually the case. You can't be doing offense and defense at the same time. So you go on defense. You see the other guy's offense. He puts 4 or 5 punches together. Bop, 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 bop. Now it's your turn to come back. It's just the way that it works. The really good fighters, bop, 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 and then they'll get out of the way. So now when it's your turn to go, there's nothing to hit. Now we play the footwork game, blah, blah, blah. I come and touch you again, I move. But this is the game that we're playing. Ortega played this game all night long. Any question of Ortega, can he go 25 minutes based on the fact that in his previous fight, which was 2 years ago with Max, he had a hard time going 25 minutes? No. No. Ortega was there for the long haul, and he played a very smart game. He didn't just go out and use up all that energy with some of his grappling and looking for submissions. He had respect for Zombie. As a matter of fact, the one time that Ortega was on top, knocked him down and came on top, he used ground and pound. He didn't try to pass the guard, look for a head and arm choke, and try to find some of these moves that he's likely, as good as he is at grappling, he's likely to not find on somebody as experienced as the Zombie. But that shows a smartness, right? That showed a strategy, and that showed a composure. Brian Ortega's very young, guys. Don't forget that. Just because he's fought for world championships and you guys all love him, sometimes you... This guy's young. This guy's 28 years old. He's got a decade left on the shelf. He's got 7, 8 years in a bad scenario left on the... He's a very young guy. So for him to show this kind of composure, particularly after the very brutal defeat that he had... I mean, if there's any term that's been corrupted over my lifetime, it's the term fighter. It's now about the punches and the kicks and the reach and the power. And a fighter, when I was growing up, is somebody that got up when it was hard to do, that pushed forward when they didn't want to. Do you know the mental toughness that it would have required for Brian Ortega to get up for a fight that's not as big as his last fight? His last fight was for the world championship in front of a sold-out arena. Now he's going to fight in front of nobody. In a contender's fight, that alone. The mental toughness that it would take for Brian Ortega at a youthful age, who's now getting roles in Hollywood, to go, wait a minute, these aren't my people. These are my people over it. What have I done? Get in the car, knock on the door, say I'm sorry, and be welcomed back. I mean, this shows a real maturity. Brian Ortega deserves so much credit right now. He really does. And I've seen higher paced fights from Brian Ortega, but I've seen sloppier fights, right? I mean, there's a balance there. Does he want the oohs and ahs of the people, or does he want to go out and win this round and win the following round and become the number one contender? Then Volkanovski comes on the back of it. Volkanovski was so happy. He didn't care about Ortega. He didn't care about Zombie. Volkanovski comes out and he goes, finally, we have some direction. And you know what? I get that too. Volkanovski's got a bad rap. Volkanovski is the currently most disrespected world champion. Bellator, UFC, Ryzen, PFL, Volkanovski is the most disrespected champion today. And it's not because he's not great, and it's not because people don't acknowledge his greatness. So as people are questioning his 2 fights with Max, of which he did what he said he was going to do, when he said he was going to do it, under the unified rules, and he lived with the result. He is the champion. And he's also one of the only champions that, to use his own word, had no direction. Nobody knew who was next. And at 145, there's a lot of great options, but nobody knew who was next. Finally, Dana steps forward as a leader and says, this is the boom. Puts his finger on the calendar. Winner of this fight's going to go into Volkanovski. And apparently, that is Brian Ortega. All right, let me give you an update from the weekend because a lot of things happened. One thing that happened is Conor versus Poirier is all but official, and if I was to quote Dana White, all we're waiting on is the contracts. Look, Poirier's taking that fight, we all know it. The UFC has found a date of which they didn't even have. Dana said, we created this date for Conor, and Conor McGregor, whether you guys like it or not, you'd be the biggest hater in the world. Conor McGregor is a man of his word. Now, Connor might blow in the wind and he might throw a whole bunch of ideas out there, but once he settles in on one and he says he's going to do it, he goes out and does it. Connor's fighting Poirier, and I feel like that's very interesting because Poirier made a very interesting comment, right? And the question is, why are they fighting? Are they fighting just to entertain us? Are they fighting because Khabib said whoever gets through Poirier gets to me? Are they fighting because Poirier is still upset about his first fight with Connor when he got thrown in there with Connor, not having enough footage on Connor, maybe feels like he got caught by surprise by Connor? Maybe it's because Poirier really became Poirier after that fight with Connor. I don't know. Why are they fighting? I don't know. But I don't know what more reasons we need. And what Poirier said, and I quote, is 25 minutes to make life fair. I found that to be a very interesting comment. What does that mean? My interpretation of what that means is the boogie monster in my closet of my career is my fight with Conor McGregor. That's how I interpreted that. And that's a story we can all relate to, right? We all have something we wish we would have redone, or we would have redone differently, or we'd like a redo at. And that could be anything all the way down to a quiz in school on a math problem, right? It can be anything. But if I could just go redo that, if I could just redo that, then I would have qualified for this class. And then I could have got a scholarship. And then I could have gone to this school. And then I would have met this girl. I mean, right, it's one of those things. So if Poirier needs to fix his life by getting in there with Conor McGregor and either having a contest where he can live with the result and go, okay, you proved it to me and you're the guy, or I proved it to you and I'm the guy, and that first fight we got to erase. Whatever it is, but I like that story. I like that story. Conor is a great storyteller. But on this one, Conor has yet to tell the story. He has just told the who and the what. He has not yet told us the why. I look forward to that. I trust that Conor will. I think that Conor is smart enough to do this, but that is the piece that he's missing right now, right? If Conor wants to do this big, massive piece of business, yes, Conor Mania is real. But even Conor Mania fluctuates. It fluctuates. And the piece that they are not telling us yet is why are we here? If it's all about Khabib, I'm in, but I need to be told by you. If this is about, I like Dustin, and, you know, I thought Dustin got a bad... I mean, don't forget, Nate Diaz created a fight with George Masvidal by saying, I have a golden ticket, and this guy's been screwed, and this guy reminds me a lot of myself, and therefore I'm going to help him out. Okay, great. That's not based on any personal animosity, but that's one hell of an interesting story that had never been told. I've never seen anybody do a call out and say, I want to help this guy, because he reminds me of myself. Never heard it before. Loved it the second I did. They went and booked Madison Square Garden, and The Rock showed up. I mean, you see what I'm saying? The why is so important. The better why you have, the better it is. But if you leave the why out, we have nothing to do here. Okay, great. So that's one piece of the weekend. Then ESPN treated everybody. I mean, talk about a pandemic special. They give us Lomachenko in a world unification fight with Lopez for free. Turn on ESPN, you're going to have this fight. So I did. I turned on ESPN. And I talked to Kevin Ioli. Before anything goes on in boxing, I always reach out to Kevin Ioli because I like boxing, but I don't follow it perfectly close, and it's a little bit hard to, in all fairness. Boxing makes it a little bit hard to follow, guys. I just said, look, man, does Lopez belong in here? Ioli said, you bet he does. This guy can really crack. That was a quote. So I'm watching the fight, and I know Lomachenko. I mean, this guy's special. From the Ukraine, won the Olympic Games twice. There's a lot of BS in boxing. It's just the way it is. There's not what we call a competitive architecture in boxing. Somebody becomes champion, and then a lot of people keep everybody worth a damn away from that guy because he can stay champion, not in the Olympics. Olympics is a straight line bracket. He won that thing, and then he came back and won it again. So this is a very special fighter. And I have to resort back to his amateur record because you can trust whoever comes to the Olympics can box. With a gold medal, did it twice. Okay. But he's taking on a 23-year-old kid. That 23-year-old kid named Lopez had also been in the Olympics. He represented Honduras, which isn't terribly known for grabbing medals in the games. By the way, he's 23 years old. I mean, in all fairness, he's a boy. He doesn't have all of his strength. He didn't have all of his experience yet. And he failed at something Lomachenko succeeded at twice. That's all the evidence I have. But I share that with you because that's probably more evidence than you had, right? Boxing just has not done a great job of telling these stories, particularly when they don't think the other guy even belongs in there, and they did not think Lopez belonged in there. Lopez is talking so much trash. Oh my gosh. Lopez is saying, hey, he would put Lomachenko down. He dismissed him. They asked him to apologize for it. He said, I apologize with nothing. I'm going to knock this guy out. He would not stop. And even Lomachenko did it. You've seen those guys that get punked in a verbal off? So their way of doing it is they just throw the towel in and they sit back and they like laugh because they're not clever enough to come up with a response. And then they say, well, at some point he's going to have to answer for the things he says, right? Like, oh my God, gag me with a smurf, the most boring thing in the world. But you see it all the time. When one guy is outsmarted and he knows he is, so then he acts like it's all a big joke and he threatens that he's going to do his talking with his fighting. That's what Lomachenko did. Lopez wasn't kidding around. So the very first round of this opens up, Lopez whips his ass. And it was a lot like watching Conor versus Floyd. And the one thing about watching Conor versus Floyd is there was less than 10 seconds left in the first round when Floyd Mayweather took a closed fist and moved it in a forward direction. He did not even try to win the round. He never once saw an opening. He never once took a risk. He never once mounted an offense until there was 10 seconds left. The one and only punch Floyd threw in the first round, and the crook in Nevada State Athletic Commission gave the round to Floyd. I bring that to you because Lomachenko was in the same spot. He just could not see an opening. This Lopez would pressure him, and then he would blitz him, and he would get out of the way, and Lomachenko would have to start back over and try to find his way back in. It was just rinse and repeat. Lopez kept doing it. All of a sudden, the bell rings. Round's over. 1-0 Lopez. They go to the second round. It's the same as the first. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth. It's all the same. I mean, even boxing that loves to do the screw job, right, that loves to just... Yeah, we'll give it to who the media said we should give it to. We'll give it to who we think the promoter wants, right? Even they had to give all six for Lopez. There was just no way around it. It was just as clear as Floyd versus Conor round one. And even if you're in a dirty commission like Nevada, that's still hard to do. I understand Nevada, but it's hard to do. So they give all six to Lopez. So the ESPN announcer had a great line. And he says it in the seventh round. He says, guys, I'm aware that Lopez is winning this fight. But believe me when I tell you, eventually a fight's going to break out because Lomachenko's not going to just give this thing away. Eighth round comes around. That was the round when Lomachenko realized, I'm in trouble. I want these championships and I am a champ. And he started coming after him. The problem was Lopez was ready for it. Lopez didn't mind being in a fight himself. So he finds himself in a fight for the next four rounds. This was a great match. There was no reasonable person that could make a case, in fairness, to give that to Lomachenko. That doesn't mean the three guys that got licensed to be boxing judges are reasonable people. They never have been over the history of time. Why would they be this night? They were. They had it right. Lopez leaves with all the belts. Now, I'm giving you the story of what happened, but it's a projection and a glimpse into the future, right? ESPN Top Rank, Lomachenko and Lopez are going to want to run that one back. That was not a big fight for Lopez in the scope of big fight. A rematch would be a big fight, be a huge fight. But nobody knew that Lomachenko could be beat, particularly by a boxer that's 23 years old from Honduras who did the same amateur path as Lomachenko did and didn't have nearly the success. It was a very interesting tale. And the history of boxing says if a younger guy beats an older guy and they rematch, the younger guy will beat him again, only easier. I think that many of us believe that now that Lomachenko has learned, that Lomachenko perhaps just didn't know. Not that he didn't take him seriously from a physical and a training standpoint. Lomachenko's never blown anybody off. But a lot of times when you find yourself in a fight that is harder than you thought it was going to be, things unravel very quickly. I'm not here to suggest for you that that is what happened. I'm here to suggest for you that that is what might have happened. When you find yourself in a match that's harder than you thought the match was going to be, it's very hard to correct that on the go. And there was no signs of Lomachenko that he was quitting, that he was sailing it in. There was very good signs that Lopez stood ground, used the reach, got out of the way, never let Lomachenko close enough until the eighth round. And then it turned out Lopez was a bit of a brawler himself, not just a boxer. Very interesting fight. I bring this to you. If you've missed it, you missed something great. Good news, I predict for you, you're going to see it again. How do you banish high rates on car insurance? You switch to Geico. During Geico Ween Moi October, is their favorite time of year. And the folks over at GEICO have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for you and your family. Switching to GEICO isn't so scary, especially when you could brew up spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote today. Go to GEICO.com and see just how much you could save. No eye of newt needed. Happy GEICO-ween, everybody. Daniel Cormier was talking about Izzy Adesanya. And Cormier said, and I quote, "Adesanya would be big problems for anybody at heavyweight except Ngannou," end quote. Now, the reason that's interesting, when you have a guy like Daniel Cormier who's been there, done that, but he's been there, done that also in two different weight classes, he understands the importance of size and he also understands a size discrepancy. I need to back up to the night that Adesanya beat Whitaker. There was talk as soon as that night. Now, the fight between Adesanya and Paulo Costa was made that night because Adesanya's too damn smart to leave a ring without lining up what's next. But there was still talk that night of Adesanya versus Jones. And Daniel Cormier, who called the fight, said, "Look, I see what the world's seeing. This Adesanya is special. I believe he would have size problems with Jones." That's also a quote, end quote. So to hear the same guy, Daniel Cormier, now talk about Adesanya, now glossing over 205, all of a sudden there's no size problems, and all of a sudden say he could give everybody problems at heavyweight except for Ngannou, I just found to be very interesting, because on the back of that, Adesanya came out. And Adesanya said, "I think what they want to do next for me is that light heavyweight." Now, he did not offer a thought on top of that. But I'm looking at that comment going, wait a second. Nobody wants you to just move to light heavyweight unless they're moving you in against Jan Blachowicz. They're just going to bump you up to light heavyweight to go and have some fun with one of the boys. They're going to throw Adesanya against Reyes by example. Adesanya against Glover by example. They're going to take a sitting champion and move him to light heavyweight. It's going to be for the strap. But Adesanya didn't say that. Adesanya just said, I think they might be looking at me at light heavyweight. Now, I don't know what we're to make believe with that, because when you do look at Adesanya at 185, there's a lot of great matches to still do. I mean, a rematch with Marvin is out there somewhere. Weidman is speaking up. Adesanya himself has complimented Darren Till and called out Cannoneer, and nobody can dismiss Whitaker. You don't have to agree on what that order is. My point to make to you is he's not cleaned out the division. He is clearly the best of the division, but he has not cleaned out a division. He's not in a bad spot. So the talks of moving him to 205, I would find very interesting. But if we moved him to 205, we're now talking about him versus Jan. You have to do that one first. And then him versus... Do you see where the music stops? Do you see where moving him to 205 doesn't necessarily satisfy any problem, but could create a few? Unless he's going to be Amanda Nunes, keep both belts and defend them both. And by the way, with what he weighs, he's going to give up weight at 205. That might be what he does. I'm just not seeing a need for that. Not to mention Adesanya versus Jan is not some kind of big piece of business right now. Right? Adesanya versus... the vacuum in my closet is just as, I mean, right? I mean, that just works. Adesanya just works. Versus is an afterthought at this point. I don't think he's cleaned out 185. I think I'm very light on the idea of him moving up to 205. I think it was an offhanded comment when he said it. I think if it was a realistic comment that was being discussed, he would have had a name, which would only be Jan Blachowicz. Tell me where I'm wrong. So I've been hearing this rumor. What do you do with Chimaev? Right? I mean, that's the quote. What do you do with Chimaev? And how quickly can we get this done? I mean, the entire Chimaev gimmick. I'm not talking about the fighter. I'm not talking about the straight-up killer in Chimaev. I'm talking about the gimmick. The gimmick that this guy fights often. He fights in two different weight classes, and he has two fights booked at all time. I don't want this gimmick to go away. I think it's great. And I think of all the guys that talk tough, we've only seen one other guy back it before, and that's Donald Cerrone. And Donald wasn't even put in the position to have two fights at the same time over two different weight classes. He'd have done it. but he wasn't given the opportunity. So Chimaev got in this position. He backed what he said. I only offer that to you because I don't want the gimmick to go away. I like the whole thing. I want him booked in two fights at all times, in different weight classes at all times. It's cool. It's unique. It's never been done before, and it's also what separated him. There has been nobody with a meteoric rise like Chimaev in 2020. Nobody. Nobody. Even if you go back to Sugar Sean, who had a meteoric rise, but he dates back to 2019. I'm talking about specifically in 2020. It's Chimaev, but we got to get him fights lined up. So Neil Magny, God bless him, steps up and says, man, I'll do this fight. And not only did Magny say he would do the fight, Magny went even further to talk about how stupid the rankings are, which to me, I loved it because they are stupid. They are. You're either the champion or you're not. And to be the number one contender doesn't mean you're the number one ranked guy. You could be ranked 1 through 5 and be identified as the number one contender. In fact, that's not even a rule. That's just one that happens all the time. So the rankings are a little bit silly. They're just a talking point. They're a jumping off space. That's it. They're meant for an article. I appreciated that Magny was aware enough to know that. And Magny is a top-ranked guy. Magny's been in the top 10 for I don't even know how long. And guess what? I don't know what he's ranked. I know he's a top-ranked. That's all I know. Because to Neil's point, the rankings don't matter. But I'll tell you something that does matter is a badass who steps up to the plate. What does matter is a badass that's about to find himself in a main event. What I will tell you is a badass named Neil Magny who just tied the record with George St. Pierre for the most wins in the history of the welterweight division. Neil Magny matters. Neil Magny has struggled to find himself interesting. Neil Magny's come out at press conferences and said, I don't care about any of that. I just want to fight. I got no problem with that. That's his life and his career. It's frustrating to me because when I see Neil Magny, I see something special. I see something different. And I see a guy who should care. But either way, we're in this position. And even if it's on accident, Neil Magny is all of a sudden interesting. So I didn't have a way to get a hold of Neil Magny. I think we're like Twitter friends, but then you got to go through a DM and he takes like a week to respond. It's just one of these things. So I call Chimaev and I just go, hey man, reading this stuff, I'm about to go make a YouTube video. What's up with you and Magny? Is there any truth to this? And he said, man, I don't know. He said a number of guys were offered the fight. They said no. I know that Neil has said he wants it. I know Neil will do it. And he said, I just want to tell you, I respect Neil. He said, and he was very calm. He was very polite. When you talk to Chimaev, it's like when you listen to a Khabib interview. The tone and the demeanor is very friendly, but the words are very chilling. Okay, so here is Chimaev's exact words. And I asked him, can I make a video on this? And can I quote you? He said, yes, of course, my brother. He said, I really respect Neil Magny. He said, he is going to his execution, but he show up anyway. And this wasn't tough guy talk. He said these words to me the same as he said hello to me and he said goodbye to me. We were just talking. He said that he's going to an execution, but he'll show up anyway. I thought that was interesting. I'm predicting for you it's Magny versus Chimaev because I'm not hearing any other rumblings, and it looks like Neil Magny's the only guy that showed up to the interview. I think that Neil Magny deserves something to happen to him. This is the only thing I've ever heard of Neil Magny ask for, and if it's the one thing he's asked for in his whole career, I think he's owed it. But I do agree with Chimaev, not in the execution part. Neil Magny can take care of himself, believe me when I tell you that, but on the respect part, on the credit part, on the stepping up to the plate part. And I hope through this process that Neil Magny understands he deserves a lot. He asks for a little. He has the fans here. Neil needs to direct us, you, the audience. Point the cannon in one direction. This is the first time he's ever done it. I predict for you he's going to get what he asked for. So if you get what you asked for the one time you do it, you're at 100% rate. Why don't you ask for something else? All right, let me pose a question to you guys, and then I'm going to attempt to answer it myself. The question is simply this. It has to do with Henry Cejudo. How long can Henry sit on the sidelines calling different people out before he gets annoying? And I'll start at the end, okay? I'll give you my answer and I'll work backwards. He's not there yet. I feel that everything Henry has done from 249 Ford has worked. The problem that I run into in trying to put the pieces of this puzzle together is, what is the end game? If the end game is not a game, it is very straightforward and is what he has told us, which is, thank you, I had fun, and goodbye. In conjunction with, I'm still out there, I'm still doing commentary with ESPN, I still have an interest in writing books, so I'm going to keep my name in the headlines and keep that fire as hot as I can and keep it burning for as long as I can. Man, he's a home run. He's nailed it. I've made just as many videos, I have discussed on my podcast just as many times Henry Cejudo since he retired as when he was fighting. Truth. He's interesting. He's fun. He's funny. He's never really been wrong. Like, he's calling for guys or said, well, you're only the champion because I'm not here. He's making some of these threats. But when the guy's an Olympic champion and a world champion and a world champion again, it's kind of hard to question him. I also do think that there is a level of sincerity that we must take Henry's retirement with. Right? It was a little confusing at the time. Let me back you up to 249. Out of nowhere, he beats Dominic Cruz. Out of nowhere, he tells Dana, thanks, keep it real, I'm out of here. He then goes to a press conference 40 minutes later, showers up, gets his paycheck, goes to a press conference, and then lacks like, well, you know, if Dana writes a big enough check, I'll be back. It's like, okay, well, I've seen this movie 20 times. You're negotiating through the public, and now you're feinting a retirement. I fully get it. Like, guys will say things right after a fight that you never want to hold them accountable for. BJ Penn beat somebody. I want to say it was Sean Shea. He beats somebody, though, and he licks the blood off of his gloves. I mean, as disgusting as that is, you can't really judge BJ. You're just on this high. You're on this adrenaline high. Guys just do things right in that moment, and they happen to be caught on camera. I bring you the BJ example because it's not like he's a vampire and he would have licked blood off his gloves in any other scenario. It's just one of these weird moments. So, okay, maybe Henry had a weird moment. Maybe he was going to really negotiate something and he went all the way to the edge and he'll walk this one back. Well, man, he gave the belt up and Dana didn't play around either. Dana said, I will take him at his word. I think it's a bad choice. I hope it's not the one he makes. But I'm going to be in a matchmaker meeting in 1 week and I'm going to go off of what he told me, including if that means putting a vacant title up for grabs. So, okay, both guys made their move. Henry had 1 week. Henry retired. And he moved on. I believe he's left the USADA pool. I can't confirm that. I believe he did. I believe he's very sincere in his retirement, but he was staying in the gym. And fighting is one of those things where it might sound like a cool thing to do. It might. Some people might think it sounds weird. But we can at least agree it's a very difficult thing to do. It is not a hobby. You do not have guys who has a hobby as a way to stay in shape, go in the gym and get punched in the face and kicked in the leg and kneed in the chest. I mean, they just don't. They're doing it for a very specific reason, which is I'm getting ready to do this in battle in front of the world for esteem, prestige, and a paycheck. I mean, it's one of these things, but he was staying in the gym. So I talked to Henry some meaningful amount of time ago, but his 249, his retirement was a period of time ago. I think that was in March, April, May, even. I think it was May now that I'm saying this. And Henry said, man, I'm looking at boxing. There's this guy, Ryan Garcia, and they're talking about doing something in the Middle East. I think I'm going to go box this guy. And then I see Henry a while later on like an Instagram, and he's in the gym with Mike Tyson. And he's working on some stuff, and Henry moves really good, and he hasn't gained any weight. I'm going, well, this guy's still working hard. He's going to do something. I don't know what it is, but he's going to do something. So then he calls out everybody in the sport. He's calling out Volkanovski, and he's calling out Peter Young, and he's coming after Aljo. And it's just one of these. Now Lomachenko loses to Lopez, and Henry's going to come beat up Lopez. And it's one of these things where I have concluded on my own and through actions and words by Henry Cejudo that there is a level part of this. It is very sincere, but there is still that question that he has of, do I want to be done? I realize I said I'm done. I realize it appears I'm done. I realize I have accomplished things that nobody else will ever accomplish. Nobody can ever be the youngest American to win an Olympic gold medal and then go and be a UFC champion in two different weight classes the first time again. By example, he will always have the record of being the first to have done. I mean, there's certain things that Henry's done just simply can't be questioned. So if you're going to come back, why are we coming back? A championship is not enough. It's not enough when you have as many as he has. A cash grab, sure. Everybody can relate to that. And there would be a big cash grab there. particularly the way he's keeping himself interesting, pissing off the right guys while getting headlines doing it. Okay, but when's that going to happen? Right? He's 33 years old. If he's 35, if he's 36, we're not even having this conversation. He is now done. But not at 33, not at 33 and a half, not at 34. I do not know the answer to my own question of how far can Henry do this. I want to take your guys' temperature. But I am comfortable in my statement that he's not there yet. He is still interesting. He's still funny. And he's still right. There are people who are champion right now because he left. How long will that be true? There's only one way to find out.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
We've got a very different kind of sponsor for this episode. The Jordan Harbinger Show, a podcast you should definitely check out since you're a fan of high-quality, fascinating podcasts hosted by interesting people. The show covers such a wide range of topics through weekly interviews and heavy-hitting guests, and there are a ton of episodes. You'll find something interesting since you're a fan of this show. I recommend our listeners to check out Jordan's Conversations with Danny Trejo and Neil Brennan. There is an episode for everyone, no matter what you are into. The show covers stories like how a professional art forger somehow made millions of dollars while being chased by the FBI and the mafia. The podcast covers a lot, but one constant is his ability to pull useful pieces of advice from his guests. I promise you, you'll find something useful that you can apply to your own life. Whether that's an actionable routine change that boosts your productivity or just a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. We really enjoy the show and we think you will as well. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's Harbinger, H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, back to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
So, Michael Chandler came under some fire this past week, which really caught me off guard. Okay, let's back up. Michael Chandler with Bellator, contract expires, goes onto the free market, gets picked up by the UFC. Next thing he knows is he is on standby in Abu Dhabi for potentially Khabib versus Justin Gaethje, which, by the way, Khabib and Justin Gaethje have not seen a scale yet, let alone a fight, which means he's still on standby. Somewhere along the way, Islam Makhachev's fight with RDA falls off RDA COVID. Okay, so Islam is now available and out there. The only other available guy is Michael Chandler, so Islam tries to get into it with Michael Chandler. Fair play by Islam. Smart move by Islam. Hold the phone. I'm not talking about Islam. I'm talking about Michael Chandler right now, who is doing what he was hired to do, who is doing what he said he would do, and who, by the way, has not yet lost that opportunity. I only share that with you because he is a standby fighter. And there is some kind of a make-believe land that because he didn't fight Islam, which he had never agreed to do, that he is chickened out. He does not have an opportunity to fight Islam. He is on standby. The fight has not yet weighed in. The fight is not yet official. Now, let me just remind you how this works, just so we're all on the same page here. Because my deadline that I just set for you as the weigh-in, I haven't finished my thought. Khabib and Gaethje, at least in theory, will both weigh in on the contracted title fight weight of 155 pounds or less. Chandler will then get on the scale because the party's not over. Nothing is over and nothing ends until it's the time when your music hits those speakers and you make that walk. Up until that moment, Michael Chandler has been hired and has agreed to do a very specific job that many people don't want to do, which is to be on standby. Quite possibly go through a full training camp, fly to a different continent, make weight, do your paperwork, test, quarantine, and have to go home. It was not a wonderful spot, by many's opinion, that Chandler was in. Many people have refused to do that job. I respect it. It's what was asked of him. He's the new guy. I mean, in all fairness, the new guy has to do some things that some other guys don't want to do. He is the new guy, and this is what his assignment was. Imagine if he said no to it. Or imagine if he gets over there and he gets into some kind of a gang mentality that, oh, I'm being called out by Islam, and Islam's got a bunch of friends here, and it's 20 to 1, and if I don't do it, then I'm the chicken. That's not what he agreed to do. He showed strength in being the odd man out, in being outnumbered, and following through on what he said he would do, which is not done yet. I really feel as though that part of the story is being left out. Islam did nothing wrong. Very smart of what Islam did. Khabib did nothing wrong, saying, hey, Gaethje's here, everything's good, my buddy Islam needs a fight, you're here too, get to get. Nobody was wrong here, but that includes Chandler. Chandler has done nothing except what he said he would do, which, by the way, put yourself in his spot. Okay, you're going to fly across the world with nobody, where you know nobody. You're going to quarantine. Very boring, by the way. If you haven't been in a quarantine, maybe I'm taking for granted because I've been in 7 in 7 weeks. You're going to train. You're going to cut weight. You're going to cut all of your trainers and everybody that goes with you a check. You're going to get a very small amount from the UFC, but you're not going to make them. You're not going to punish them for that. This was just the deal. You guys did your part. I'm losing on this one. And then somebody else is going to try to talk you out of what you've already agreed to do. He stayed the course. Should things work out for the reason that he was brought in, put yourself in this spot, please. Should things work out for the reason that he was brought in, his reward will be that he will be standing across from Justin Gaethje in a steel cage with a referee in between them, or his reward is he will be standing across from Khabib Nurmagomedov in a steel cage with a referee between them. Imagine that. Imagine you were in that spot. You had to fight either one of those guys. But now you don't even know who it is. Two very different styles. Gaethje, who's planning to stand up. Khabib, who's planning to go to the ground. You put yourself in a vulnerable position and say, I'll do either one, and I'll do it at the absolute last second because that's what I was asked to do, and that's what I agreed to do. That's all Chandler's done. And I do want to remind you, because a lot of the headlines that I read as recently as 5 minutes ago were telling a story as though Chandler tucked and ran, or he refused, or he's on a flight back home, one of the headlines said. Excuse me. Chandler was brought out there to do a job. That job's not yet complete. Keep that in mind. To pass judgment on Michael Chandler for doing nothing more than following through on what he got asked to do is honorable. Khabib is starting to push the envelope a little bit. And he hasn't done anything wrong, but I'm fearing that he's about to. Back up. Khabib is a man of his word, right? He is an extreme believer in principle. He's a very principled guy in his life, and he carries that life over into his career. Great. We love that about him, and we get it. Here's where things are starting to get slippery. He's starting to say too much. He's starting to make too many statements. And as a guy who always does what he says he will do when he only has two or three things, that's a very honorable code. When he's coming out and put in a position, and fight week, you're in this position. It's not totally fair to Khabib, but in all fairness, he's asked to say a lot of things, and he is. And he's starting to put all sorts of conditions on who, what, when, and where. And where that starts to become slippery, I mean, look, he just said a moment ago, whoever goes through Dustin Poirier gets me next. I don't care if that's Tony or Connor. If you go through Poirier, you get me next. If your name is GSP, you can get me anytime you want. Okay, great. But if we are to take a principled man at his word, then we are to believe that if you beat Dustin Poirier, you get him next. Or if you are Dustin Poirier and you beat whoever you have next, you get Khabib. Khabib is now coming out and saying that he will not honor the result of Khabib and Conor McGregor unless the fight is contested at 155 pounds. I don't have a huge problem with that. That fight will be at 170. Dustin Poirier has never fought above 170. I apologize, 155. He used to be a 45-pounder. Contrary to popular belief, Conor McGregor has no problem making 155 pounds. The highest Conor McGregor has ever weighed in his life was for his Cowboy Cerrone fight. He weighed in at 168 pounds with some clothing on and after breakfast, which means he could make 155 pounds in anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours. That may surprise a non-fighter. Yes, Conor McGregor could lose 13 pounds in less than 2 hours. I share that with you because I'm sure that fight will be at 155. Where I say this is a slippery slope is if you were the champion of the world, you fight anybody that you're asked to fight. That is how the sport works. If you don't like it, go into a line bracket. Go enter a tournament. Go to the World Championships, the Olympic Games. There's other competitive architectures. This one is you get a phone call from Dana White. That's who you're fighting. And to remind of a quick history lesson for Khabib, when Khabib got the call to fight Conor, there was a lot of other good options, really good options. Khabib was persistent. Khabib was definitely one of those very good options, but he had also missed weight a couple of times. It wasn't this impeccable, perfect career. But Khabib stood his ground. He got his base, and ultimately he went outside of a T-Mobile arena and sat on the hood of Dana White's car and waited for him. Dana likes that stuff. There was an Ultimate Fighter one time where Dana had to come to the house and make an announcement to the guys. Hey, all of you guys that lost, one of you I'm putting back in. Because the guy that is in, I can't remember what happened to him. He got scratched. It might have been a staph infection. Might have been a weight issue. But he let everybody know. Dana then leaves. One guy runs out off camera and begs Dana at his car. Begs him, make me the guy. You said one of us goes in. No one said, make me. Dana loved it. I only share that with you because you may not like that as much as a straight line bracket. You may not like the competitive architecture in this. I'm sharing with you what it is, and I'm sharing with you the consistency, and I'm sharing with you that same consistency paid off the night Khabib got the call. Khabib versus Conor turned into a huge fight. It was not welcomed with open arms by the media or fans. Nobody fully understood how this fight is going to work. Khabib was not Khabib, and Khabib was not a big star at the time of that fight. You then had the Barclays incident, and you had the handcuffs and the trespassing and Artem Lobov. I mean, there was a lot of moving parts that helped to tell the story and build that fight into what it was. I'm talking about the night that it was announced and Dana made a decision. He made a decision based on a will and a persistency of one person. That night, that persistency in that person was named Khabib. The night on The Ultimate Fighter is the one guy that followed him to the car. The night Stipe Miocic, the greatest and most decorated heavyweight of all time without question, got his opportunity, it's because he started screaming. He ripped his mouthpiece out after he knocked someone out and screamed at Dana White through the fence. Dana respected it. I'm not encouraging you to follow Dana out of a house. I'm not encouraging you to sit on the hood of Dana's car. I'm not encouraging you to scream at Dana White in front of the world from the cage. I am telling you three stories that have a consistency that earned the decision makers respect. You can sit around and tell me that's fair, or you can sit around and be a baby and tell me it's not fair. I'm here to tell you historically it's the way that it is. So before somebody wants to come out and start putting demands on who they are going to fight now that they've got the belt and they can turn the gun on everybody else, be real careful. We respect Khabib for being a man of principle. We respect fighters and champions that fight anybody they're asked to fight when they're asked to fight them. Just because everyone gets a sweaty crotch or inner thigh chafing doesn't mean you have to go through life with a sweaty crotch or inner thigh chafing. Old Spice has new Below Deck Powder Spray to help you feel drier and cleaner down below. And new Below Deck Anti-Chafe Stick to help prevent inner thigh chafing. Available in the family planning aisle at Walmart or online at walmart.com/Old Spice Below Deck. So guys, let's talk some Phil Baroni. And I got to preface this before I say it. I am not here to kick a man when he's down, and I'm not here to bury Phil Baroni. I am going to repeat things that Phil just said. This was done on Phil's social media that he already put out to the world. So back up a little bit to me, to personalize this, and Phil Baroni. Phil was a wrestler for Central Michigan. And contrary to maybe what you knew, because he was kind of known for having some heavy hands and liking to go out there and box, he's a pretty good wrestler. Wrestled at 174 pounds. Made it to the NCAA tournament his senior year. Phil got a degree and did social work. Many people didn't know that. Store that thought away. We'll circle back to it. So my insertion to Phil Baroni is he gets brought over to the UFC and he gets thrown in there right away with Matt Lindland. And Matt Lindland, I don't know what he was ranked at the time, but he was a top guy in the world. He had never lost a fight. He was coming off an Olympic as well as a world silver medal. And this was like the year 2002. Matt was a silver medalist in 2000, another silver medal at the World Championships in 2001. And this supposedly was going to be the guy that was going to beat him. And mixed martial arts was at a very different time back then. If you could box and Phil could, and you could wrestle and Phil could, you could go to the top. I mean, guys were still choosing. I'm telling you about Matt Lindland because I was cornering Matt Lindland and training Matt Lindland, getting ready for Phil, but we were very worried about it. Matt was a dominant wrestler, but he was just a wrestler. Everybody was. Guys were just starting to be both, but they weren't there yet. That was more of the goal. Phil could do a little of it both, and he wasn't afraid to put a needle in his ass every now and then to help his career. So it was one of these guys that you had to take serious. Plus, he looked the part, right? He looked big and strong. Talked with like a New York accent. He kind of had like this tough guy voice. Okay, great. We're in for a fight. Just based on reputation, things that we're hearing, we got a fight on our hands. So they go out, they have their match. Matt beats him. Fairly one-sided contest, but a fairly fun contest to watch. And the next thing you know, Phil comes out to Team Quest to train with us. So Phil's training with us and, you know, he was one of the guys. He was actually living at the gym. It had a shower and had somewhere to cook food and stayed on the mats or however that worked. But he was, you know, he was roughing it and he was in training camp. And something happened between him and Evan Tanner. I was there in the room when it happened, but I was sparring with someone. I could hear it, though. They start hitting each other so hard. And Randy Couture was in the room. He had to stop what he was doing and go over and break these two up. So Randy decides after he scolds them, like a puppy that missed the paper, that they've got the message and that everything's going to be fine. So I go back and I'm sparring. I think I was working out with Tim Sylvia. There's only like six of us in the room. Randy was somebody, Phil and Evan, whoever I was going with. And no, sure enough, I start hearing the same sounds. And then I start hearing F-U-F. Randy breaks them up and now they don't get to go back together. I end up going with Evan or Phil and Tim Sylvia goes with the... I mean, he mixes up the room. But it was just a mess. And then Phil Baroni leaves... And he turns on the whole gym on an internet site known as the Underground Forum, which was a very influential site, but even more so at that time. So next thing you know, Phil's going to go fight Evan Tanner, who he'd just been out here and trained. He's going to go fight Evan Tanner. I think they ended up fighting twice. And Phil somewhere along the way rematches Matt Lindland after he came and trained. He fought Matt twice. He fought Evan twice. I respected it. Those are hard fights. Matt was ranked number one in the world. Evan was the world champion. I mean, Phil was never looking for something easy to do. I always respected it. But I also thought, I respected, possibly falsely, Phil was one of the original guys to have a gimmick. Phil used to come out, he'd wear a robe like a boxer would wear, and he would dance a little bit on the way to the ring, and he was the New York badass, and he would hire his own girls. They'd like dance him to the ring like a pro wrestler. That might sound silly for you, but at that time, that was wildly entertaining, right? This is before the MVPs and the Adesanyas were around. I mean, this was a guy that could entertain you on the way to the ring. He looked the part. He'd fight anybody. And when Phil would win, I mean, he'd knock guys out. Phil was fun to watch. So, but I thought it was a gimmick. I thought, like, Phil was secretly the smartest guy in the room. I only bring that to you because when he was posting today, one thing that I found humorous, if you can find humor in this. I mean, it was a call for help, and Phil said that. He said, guys, I am asking you for help. I've already been to jail. I do not want to go back. I'm in Albuquerque. I was training at Wax Jackson Wink. Wink kicked me out. I have nowhere to go. My wife stole all my money. The humorous part. The messages were so sporadic and so aggressive that people assumed that he had been hacked. Now, when somebody says somebody's been hacked, nobody's ever been hacked, right? If you've ever been hacked, great. Show us your bank account that was drained, or show us your Bitcoin that was drained, or show us your credit card that saved on your phone that was then used. Nobody hacks anybody in the history of time to send out a tweet, right? It's literally never happened. But you're happy to hand somebody that excuse in friendship, right? When a friend lies to you, it's awkward if you catch them in a lie for them, but it's more awkward for you, right? If somebody lies to me, I will never call them on it. I'll do what a reasonable person does, which is I will go talk about it behind their back. I don't call them to their face that I know they're lying. So you offer Phil, you've been hacked. Phil, at some point in this rant of a timeline, has to take the time out to inform everybody, I have not been hacked. This is actually me, and I need help. And he says, get me a plane ticket anywhere. Get me a one-way ticket anywhere. Now, Phil and I are not what you would call friends, but I've known Phil for a long time, and if he needs a plane ticket, I'm the guy to call. I'll pay, boom, wherever you want to go, here, what's a plane, I don't know what a plane ticket is, $350 or something, go. So I reached out to Phil when I'm seeing these things. Apparently he's got a different number, or he's blocked me somewhere over time, which wouldn't be unreasonable, but I haven't heard from Phil. So I did not make this video to embarrass Phil, I made this video to speak to Phil. If you need a plane ticket, I'll get you a plane ticket, okay, for one. That's part one. But the other part is, maybe this wasn't all a shtick and a gimmick. I mean, I thought this guy was a pretty accomplished guy. And he was a pretty educated guy. And he was pretty forward-thinking in his career. And he made some big money and got some big fights with having pretty good skills. But that's a compliment. I mean, that's a compliment. He was able to get people's attention. I don't know if this is what this is. Right? That's where sometimes you get lost in the gimmick. I'm a fan who's observed Phil over the years, and I've followed Phil everywhere he's went. He's gone to pro wrestling, he's gone to professional grappling, he's gone to boxing. I watched him box Chris Lieben, by example. There's something there for me. I followed him everywhere he went. But now I'm starting to wonder, did I mark out for the gimmick, or did he? All right, here's my official prediction for Khabib versus Gaethje. And I'm going to make this very long-winded, but in all fairness, guys, talking and speculating about a fight is more fun than watching the fight. It just is. Trying to guess, looking at history, following both athletes' careers, having a back and forth with friends based on history, based on saying, well, this guy gets caught with a left hand and this guy throws a good left hand. Just see his fight with John Doe. It's more fun. So I want to be long-winded on this. I will start by telling you this. This fight is not going to be close. But I don't know who's going to enforce their will. It's just a very different fight. If Justin Gaethje can start landing those kicks and landing those punches and getting out of the way and almost using dirty Muay Thai, using Muay Thai, but more from a dirty boxing, right? He's boxing, they slip an elbow in, and land that kick, he'll grab you a knee in the stomach, break away and create space. If he can do that, he can control this fight top to bottom, the same as he did with Tony Ferguson. He has that skill. And he's not going to go away. Right, he will be more tired than Khabib. Khabib is in better shape, but does it matter when Gaethje won't quit no matter how tired he is? No, it largely does not. Or the other side of it, which is Khabib takes him down. And if Gaethje gets up even one time, he will be different. Gaethje had made a statement a while ago that is very much true, and I very much take him at his word. I think he's right when he said, if I kick Khabib four times, I'll change him. He's right. If Khabib takes you down once, you're going to be changed. You will get up drained. You will get up now respecting and worried about the takedown, which is what makes you susceptible for the punches and the kicks of Khabib. If you can't find a way to keep space and you allow Khabib to march you down, it's going to be a one-way fight. The same as 28 fights we've seen before that Khabib has been involved in. It's also a very sensitive topic to try to guess and speculate on Khabib's mindset in the absence of his father. But there's also no way to talk about this fight without bringing that up. When you talk about the fight game being largely mental, a large part of mental is emotional. And it also draws you into classic storylines from Hollywood and Rocky Balboa to real life of Mike Tyson and Cusumato. It's a very real thing to lose your trainer. Who's your father? And we've seen this with other guys. I feel like I have a pass to talk about something so sensitive because I went through it, by the way. But I can just look back at Jake Shields' fight with Jake Ellenberger. And Jake Shields is a stud and Ellenberger's a stud. The line on that fight was not close. Shields was supposed to go whip Ellenberger's ass. It did not get out of the first round, but Shields also wasn't there. He was only there in body. He wasn't there. He lost his father 4 days before. I realize we've had a different amount of time, but to act as though it's going to be the same Khabib is not true. To act as though it's going to be a worse Khabib, who might be the death of anybody. And I know that Gaethje's not making that mistake. Gaethje came out this morning and he said, look, I think we're going to see a very energized and a very motivated Khabib. We won't know till this fight is over, but I tend to lend towards the side of the coin that Gaethje's on. I think there has been enough time and there is enough respect and there's enough nostalgia and there's enough reason and motivation. I do believe this is going to be a very fantastic Khabib. But I do think the storyline of who is missing from his corner as well of his life, I think it's very real. And I think that right now, we've seen how strong Khabib is here, right? We've seen. This is a mental battle. This is a mental drill. Mental exercise. Getting through training camp, getting through quarantine, making the weight limit, doing all the thing and checking all the boxes just to get to the fight was a mental exercise. And I do think that Khabib deserves a lot of credit for that. I do. I will tell you as far as my final prediction goes, and I am somebody that bases everything he says to you guys on some kind of historical precedence. If I'm to tell you that Justin Gaethje cannot be taken down, it's because when I look at Justin Gaethje's fights over the history of his career, which also extended the World Series of Fighting where I was an announcer, I offer you that because many of you didn't see those fights. It was a new and upcoming organization. It was on a network that was a little bit hard to find. I understand the whole thing. I was there, and he was never taken down. I have seen Justin Gaethje's butt hit the canvas. He's never been held down. I have never seen Justin Gaethje in his guard in his life. To explain to you what limited time he's ever spent on the ground, I have never seen him in his guard. So if he was ever down, he found a way back to his feet is the point I'm trying to make. When I bring that to you and then I tell you I have never seen Khabib not be able to take somebody down, but I have also never seen Khabib lose a fight on his feet. Now I must share with you, all combined, I've seen Khabib on his feet for less than 11 minutes. That's in 28 contests, less than 11 minutes. I understand those things. But within those 11 minutes, he did put a right hand on Conor McGregor and put him on his ass, which is something that Floyd Mayweather couldn't do in 30 minutes. Within those 11 minutes, six of them were against Ally Aquinta, where people came away and said that he looked like an amateur on his feet. Ally Aquinta is one tough son of a bitch, and Khabib won those 6 minutes. I only bring that to you because I'm not of the school of thought that Khabib cannot punch and kick. I can see that it is plan B. Once again, I will remind you, my official prediction, this is going to be a fun fight and it's a meaningful fight. When the night is over, it's going to be a very clear fight, one way or the other. The way that I am leaning, Khabib. All right, I want to give you an official prediction on Whittaker and Cannoneer. Look, this one is complicated, guys. This is not straightforward. The common belief is that Cannoneer is going to beat Whittaker. That common belief exists for one reason, which is Israel Adesanya said it's going to happen. Israel Adesanya is not an authority to give his opinion on that topic because he has not been in there with Cannoneer. That's the one thing everybody forget. Well, you know, Izzy, he sure got the right to his opinion. No, excuse me. Excuse me. He does have his right to his opinion. He is not. Don't get this wrong. He's been in there with Whittaker. You falsely think that he's been in there with Cannoneer. He is not. He likes Jared Cannoneer because he met Jared Cannoneer in an audience one time and Cannoneer was cool to him and no one's ever been nice to him because they all want to fight him. And is he good? You know what? I like you too. I'm not going to hold you back because I like you. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm up here in the loft. You're a cool dude. I'm going to pull you up here with me. Okay, great. That's an awesome story, but it doesn't make Izzy right in his analysis that Cannoneer is going to beat Whittaker. You, again, have to look at the fact Cannoneer has been a hammer. Cannoneer's got a great story. He's dropped weight classes, and as he got lower, he got better. His record got more impressive. Robert Whittaker is the former Ultimate Fighter champion, toughest tournament in all of sport, and he's the former UFC world champion. Cannoneer has been out for a period of time. Now, good news, Team Cannoneer. It's a co-main event, which means it's 15 minutes. That changes the landscape when you juxtapose that with the fact that I'm bringing in the argument that Cannoneer's been out for a period of time. A guy who has been out is very wise to come in to a co-main or less than have to be out there 25 minutes, right? Condition is the number one thing that is going to be lacking in your game when you take those kind of breaks. How's this fight going to go? If you get stuck on your feet with Robert Whittaker, historically speaking, unless your name is Israel Adesanya, you leave face down and embarrassed. So you really are left with a question. Do you believe that Cannoneer, who's a good striker but not world class, do you believe Cannoneer can get Whittaker off his feet? because Yoel Romero couldn't. Yoel Romero had 10 rounds, which equals 50 minutes, got Whittaker down a combined 3 times, but did not keep him there for a combined 1 minute. So if you're going to bet on Cannonier, by the way, feel free to. I'm giving you my prediction. If you're going to bet on Cannonier to win, you then have to support that with a thesis of how. How does he win? And if you are just saying he's going to go outstrike Robert Whittaker just because, based on no historical data, okay, great, I will tip my hat to you. And if you've got the balls to walk that to a pay window somewhere in Vegas and put some action down, I'll respect you even more. But my guess is if you make that statement, it's because you don't know what you're talking about, even if you turn out to be right. So if you do not believe that Cannonier can take Whittaker down, something that Yoel Romero couldn't do in 50 minutes, you're talking about a stand-up fight. Talking about a stand-up fight against a guy who stood with Uriah Hall, with a guy who stood with Darren Till, with a guy who stood unsuccessfully with Israel Adesanya. So if I was to ask you a different question, if you concede back to me that this fight is going to be contested on their feet and the ground part is not going to be part of it, if you concede that back to me, then let me ask you this in a different way. If Robert Whittaker is going to go kickbox Jared Cannonier, who wins the fight? Robert Whittaker. So a fan went after Connor on social media, Connor's favorite platform, Twitter. And he said, you know, Connor, I really respect, I'm paraphrasing here. Yeah, Connor, I really respect everything you've done, but you must admit that Khabib mauled you on the ground, choked you out, and at one point has a Kimura. First off, why must Connor admit that? Like, why must that be admitted by Connor? Why could a champion not live in a bubble of denial, especially if he is willing to go back out there and try again? Not to mention a guy who's been very open to tell us all, I wasn't in a good place. And there was rumors of drug and alcohol. Connor said, I wasn't in a good place. He wasn't going to confirm it, but he was saying there's some things in my life that I am no longer doing, and I would like to have that moment back. So I bring that to you because I am stuck on the question of why must Connor admit that? And I don't know that I agree with the revisionist history of that fight. That fight was pretty straightforward. It ended in a submission, so nobody's doubting it. Connor won one round, which was right. It also represents the only round that Khabib has ever lost in 28 fights. And of those 28 fights, a majority that have gone to the decision, I'm off the top of my head here, he's been out there 100 rounds, Connor's the only guy to win a single one. I'm just sharing for you, that fight was very competitive in very many places, particularly that second round. It was also interesting to go back where Khabib struggled to get Connor down. He got to a head of the outside single, terrible, terrible technique in mixed martial arts. He got stuck on both knees, did Khabib. Terrible position to be stuck in any form of combat. Head to the outside, one leg, and you're on both knees. You don't want there in jiu-jitsu, you don't want there in wrestling, you don't want there in MMA. He built on it. He scrambled. He got there with a lot of resistance. Connor was locked in the crotch at one point. Some of these intricacies aren't going to mean a lot to you guys, but if Connor had somebody to show him how to slip a shoulder, Connor never would have been taken down. Connor got every single position right, made Khabib work very hard. Connor didn't understand how to slip a shoulder. Connor ends up getting taken down. When Connor got taken down, he never got up, and Connor and his coach came out and spoke about that after and said, as part of our strategy, we believe, and I don't know why they thought this. This part I would revisit. I think they would as well, which is why they chose to share it with the world. And I think it's something they would do differently. But they came out and said, we believed that our best chance to avoid the ground was to never get there. And we also believed and conceded ahead of time, should we get on bottom, stay there, protect yourself, and wait till the round ends. It's going to be too much energy to try to get up off the bottom, and you're likely to not succeed anyway. Now, that is a strategic plan that, had they been right, they would look like the smartest guys in the room. Because they had it wrong, it looks foolish. I'm not passing judgment there. I'm sharing with you the fight between Connor and Khabib was very competitive in many positions. When Khabib got the fight where he wanted it, particularly against the fence, Khabib is Khabib and he's very special. I concede that as well. I don't disregard how that fight went. But when you have the Connor haters out there, I mean, it just reminds me of the three judges that judged him and Floyd. And between the three of them and the 27 scorecards that were turned in for 9 completed rounds, Connor wins one of them, one round in which Floyd threw one punch and openly admits he lost himself. If we're going to revisit history, let's just revisit it the way that it happened. And as far as Connor having to admit that he was mauled on the ground, why would he have to admit that? He tapped out while on the ground. Why would he have to admit that? What champion would ever admit anything other than give me another chance and I could do better next time? All right, guys, fun show today. We went an extra long, but I think we had extra to talk about, and we're going to do more on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Welcome to the MRP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who?
Let me start this thing off. Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.